Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with a Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, May 25th. On Thursdays, Sun reporters Michael Booth and John Ingold talk about the latest in climate and health news. Today, they're discussing how federal Medicaid work requirements might impact Colorado, as well as a new law aiming to help make Colorado a hub for clean hydrogen generation. Before we start, a quick message. Attention marketers! How do you make customers believe in your product? How do you achieve featured snippets or make the most of ChatGPT? The experts at Pinterest, HubSpot, Reddit, and more will be at Digital Summit Denver, June 27th to 28th, to give you the tools you need to transform your marketing. Register at digitalsummit.com/passes and use code CS250 for $250 off. Again, that's code CS250 for $250 off. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this date in 1894, tension among mine workers, owners, and law enforcement came to a head when shots rang out near Victor, a stronghold for striking laborers. The crisis represented Colorado's first, but far from last, labor war. As the silver industry collapsed during the Panic of 1893, gold mining in the shadow of Pike's Peak offered a ray of economic hope. But early the next year, members of the Western Federation of Miners protested new policies that required miners to work either longer shifts without a pay increase or the usual 8 hours but at reduced pay. Protests fell on deaf ears, and the WFM called for a strike in early February. In mid-March, mine owners imported workers to restart production, and strikers fought back. They occupied Victor and turned it into a union camp, while El Paso County Sheriff Bowers appealed to Governor Davis Waite for help. The populist executive, who sympathized with the workers, sent Colorado National Guard units to investigate, but they reported calm. In response, Bowers created a volunteer army of 1,200 men paid by the mine owners to restore control. The strikers confiscated a mine operated by replacement laborers and dynamited the offending works. Early on May 25th, a party of 300 miners struck out to attack Bowers' force encamped nearby in preparation for their own assault on Bull Hill. One man on each side died in the battle, and both groups took prisoners, which they exchanged the following day. Waite headed for the Cripple Creek District on May 27th. He disbanded Bowers' extra-legal force and called in the Colorado National Guard as peacekeepers. At Colorado Springs and Denver, the governor negotiated a settlement that restored the status quo, one of the few episodes of labor conflict in Colorado history where the workers actually won. Next, our feature story.
Thanks for being with us on the Colorado Sun podcast today. We've got our regular Thursday podcast, which is based on the temperature newsletter, which we hope you're a subscriber to. And if you're not, please go to coloradosun.com and sign up. We'd be happy to have your attention every week and your intelligence and your thoughts on the temperature, which is a mixture of climate change and health and where those two things intersect as often as we can make the connection for everybody. And joining us on the podcast today, as usual, is John Ingold, our great health reporter. And we talk about things that we've written about in the temperature or other stories that we've been working on on the Sun website. How are you, John?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. And wanted to give a quick shout out to one of our regular listeners on the podcast and a reader, Mark Hillman, on the Eastern Plains, who helped guide us toward a Republican River water story. It was really helpful. We encourage everybody to send us their ideas and areas of the state they feel are undercovered, and we'll try to get to them. So, John, today for what you've been working on lately is involving Medicaid and also some big picture national debt ceiling talks that are ongoing and making us all nervous about the stock market and just the general sense of the budget. How does this connect to what's going on with Medicaid, and what are people asking for potential changes in how Medicaid works that would involve changes to how people have to spend their day?
Yeah, sure. So I think people are familiar with the debt ceiling negotiations, which are ongoing in Washington, D.C., and are, of course, related to whether the U.S. can actually pay its bills. One sticking point in that has to do with a Republican proposal to install work requirements for Medicaid. Now, Medicaid is, of course, the government health insurance program, generally for people who are low income. The idea would be that people who are on Medicaid and who are able to work would be either required to work or required to look for work as a condition of receiving Medicaid coverage. So that could end up trickling down to Colorado in the sense that Colorado would either have to impose a Medicaid work requirement or would have to forego federal funds for people who are not abiding by the work requirement. So there was an analysis that was done recently by the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is, it's nonpartisan. It's sort of a well-known health think tank, health analysis organization, not affiliated with Kaiser Permanente. The Kaiser in that is the same family originally, but they are off on their own different tracks now. And they found that about 1.6 million people across the country, 1.6, 1.7 million people across the country could lose Medicaid coverage as a result of a work requirement. This is a little bit more than what the Congressional Budget Office, when they looked at it, scored it as. They found about 1.5 million. But the interesting thing about the Kaiser analysis is it also breaks it down by state level. And so we can see what this impact would potentially be in Colorado. And so the Kaiser Family Foundation analysis found that about 46,000 people in Colorado could potentially be lose their Medicaid coverage as a result of work requirements, and that those folks, if the state were to try to keep them on by using just state dollars, they would have to come up with the state would have to come up with about $242 million to pay to keep those folks on Medicaid every year.
And as a reminder to our listeners, the state controls how Medicaid is run a lot. It has a lot of control over it in within the borders of Colorado, but it's 50 to 60% funded by federal funds. And so obviously where that money comes in, the federal government has a lot of control over, and we're kind of at the whims of what's going on in Washington, which doesn't seem like it's going to be resolved anytime soon, unfortunately. But then different state administrators and different advocates for people who need help with their health insurance have different feelings about how much you ask people to participate in things like copays and coinsurance and sort of buying into the program. Mm-hmm. And Colorado has usually been leaning toward not asking people to spend a lot of their own money, that they attract more people to the program and have better health outcomes if you offer it with fewer strings attached. So obviously there's a lot of people in Colorado who are waiting to see how all these negotiations work out.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, Colorado has generally been a state that's been looking to expand Medicaid coverage, most notably after the Affordable Care Act passed, which allowed states to expand Medicaid coverage to people who are making just a little bit above the poverty line. And for that population, the federal government actually pays quite a bit. They pay, I think it's 90% of the cost. Whereas for the general population, the federal government would pay more or less like a 50, 60% of the cost. So one thing that the separate Kaiser Family Foundation analysis looked at was, you know, how many people on Medicaid are actually working right now? And if they aren't, why aren't they? And so we did see in this analysis that more than 60% of people on Medicaid are currently working. Those who aren't, the biggest chunks or the biggest reasons for why is that they are they're acting as a caregiver for someone, so they're effectively working. They're just not in the workforce. They're not getting paid for it. They could also be disabled, so they're unable to work. Or they are going to school. So again, they're working, they're just getting their education. There was about 9% of people, and these are national numbers, 9% of people nationwide fell into a category where they were either retired or you know, not looking for work, unable to find work, or they gave some other reason.
Right. And Medicaid is so big, people tend to forget that too. Medicaid in a lot of states, especially Colorado's expanded coverage, can, depending on economic conditions, cover 20 to 25% of the population and more than half of the live births that happen in Colorado. So whatever policy changes happen will obviously have a big impact for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So something we're going to keep an eye on. I did ask our state Medicaid agency whether they anticipated, if work requirements came in place, whether they would try to fund to keep folks on Medicaid regardless. And the answer I got back is that it's too early to say. This proposal is part of a negotiation. Does it actually end up in whatever the final deal is not certain yet. What the actual details of it will be, you know, what does it mean to be employed? What does it mean to be looking for work? All those sorts of things could have an impact on precisely how many people end up being affected here. And that, of course, would then have an impact on how much it actually costs. So, Mike, I want to switch to you. We're going to go to the topic of cleaner energy. And you've been doing some interesting reporting on the various colors of hydrogen, which I always thought was colorless. So why don't you explain that?
Technically colorless, absolutely. But in practice, in political terms and environmental terms, there's quite a bit of spectrum on that rainbow. So we're trying to explain that to folks. And the Colorado legislature actually took a big step this year that is being touted as a national model in how to handle hydrogen. Hydrogen obviously is the most common element, first element on the periodic chart, and is out there in useful, not so useful form in many places, but once you turn it into useful form, can be a cleaner burning energy that could replace a lot of hard to decarbonize elements of the economy. And we can explain that more, but what it essentially means is that you can split hydrogen out of water using electricity. But it's only clean if the electricity you're using for that highly intensive electrical process is clean itself. So you need to have electricity that's generated by solar power or by wind power or another form of energy that's not burning fossil fuels. You end up sort of playing for the tie if you're burning fossil fuels in order to create clean hydrogen as an energy source. So what the new bill does is it specifies very plainly what is considered clean hydrogen or green hydrogen, if you're going to use the color spectrum, in Colorado, and how Colorado law will then handle that and encourage that, as opposed to the other colors of hydrogen, which we'll talk about in a minute. So if you want to qualify for very lucrative federal tax credits and some state tax credits that the state has a lot of power to funnel to different groups that are developing hydrogen, if you want to get approved by the Public Utilities Commission for your new utility plant, you're going to need to follow these new rules and make sure that you can prove that the way you're creating hydrogen is clean and will not actually worsen greenhouse gases, but will actually improve greenhouse gases and therefore improve climate change. So this bill sets that into law. Governor Polis has signed it. Other states are now looking at that as a model for what they plan to do. And in national environmental groups and energy advocates are saying, yeah, if you want to see how it should be done, look at Colorado and copy the language that they use. So that's a positive for us. Colorado wants to become part of a federal hydrogen hub with New Mexico and Wyoming and Utah, where we would pool research money and locations and the geographic advantages that we have to try to attract even more federal money and become a kind of a hub of innovation in this promising new field.
And one reason hydrogen is so prominent in this discussion, as you've reported before, is that, you know, we think of electrifying transportation and, you know, moving towards electric vehicles for regular people, right? Like home consumers, people who are just driving to and from work. But when you start looking at bigger vehicles, electrification becomes a much bigger challenge if you're talking semi-trucks or, you know, big construction vehicles or something like that.
There's a couple of different places that hydrogen could make a lot of sense. Obviously, a lot more research and development needs to be done. But in big, heavy vehicles with a big payload where you could store a lot of hydrogen on board and you want to refuel them much more quickly. Electrical refueling might take half an hour, might take 2 hours on a big truck, and that's time off the road and changes everybody's schedules and makes the economy not as positive for electric vehicles. If you could replace that with hydrogen on trains that could run on hydrogen, on ocean-going ships and sea-going ships that have big cargo space that could run on clean hydrogen, those are all places that hydrogen could work, in addition to some stubborn places like cement kilns where you need intense high heat and you need it on demand. You can't afford to just you can't operate your cement kiln on a cloudy day or at night if the wind's not blowing as strong. You need access to that high intensity energy. Right now, the only answer to that is coal and natural gas. But hydrogen can replace that and burn more cleanly if you can produce hydrogen close to those places, close to the three cement kilns that operate in Colorado and put out a lot of greenhouse gases, close to Evraz Steel and Pueblo, and close to the utilities that are currently burning natural gas. So how do you promote that? The way that you promote it and attract that federal money that will create the subsidies to develop it properly is to set these parameters in place that we now have and everybody feels very positive about.
All right. Well, this is exciting. I'm interested to see where this goes, definitely.
Yeah, there will be more things to report in the next year or two about some actual projects that should be getting out of the ground.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And be sure, again, as Mike said earlier, to check out the Temperature newsletter. We put a lot of heart and love and every now and then some sarcasm into it. And I think you'll find it a fun read. So you can go to coloradosun.com/join to become a premium newsletter member and sign up to get the Temperature. So have a good week.
Thanks, everybody.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Christian Glass, who was killed by police last year after calling 911 for help, is being memorialized at the Colorado State Capitol, the day after a $19 million settlement was announced between his family and law enforcement agencies that responded to the June call. May 24th was proclaimed Christian Glass Day. His mother and father joined the governor as they unveiled pieces of Christian's art in the Capitol. The art display is part of the settlement, as well as requirements for more training for police and a county crisis response team. Glass was shot and killed by a Clear Creek County sheriff's deputy during a mental health crisis. More than 400,000 people are expected to travel through Denver International Airport this weekend for the Memorial Day holiday, and typical delays are to be expected. But ongoing staffing shortages of air traffic control staff may soon be added to that list. Staffing is to blame for minor flight delays earlier this week at DIA. The FAA is hiring frantically, and it's now getting political as the agency asks for every last cent from Congress for its next budget year. The staffing issue could be a sign of more delays to come if the FAA isn't fully funded. Earlier this month, Colorado repealed a 2005 state law that required every local government to ask voters for permission to build a faster internet option. Under that law, towns could still pursue their own internet without voter approval, but only if no one else offered advanced service, or internet speeds faster than 256 kilobits per second. More than 160 cities, towns, and counties opted out of the law, and some built their own gigabit service that was 4,000 times faster. But as Sun Business reporter Tamara Chung reports, there were other reasons for the appeal. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month for a basic membership, and if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our exclusive politics and outdoors newsletters. Thanks for starting your morning with us, and don't forget to tune in again tomorrow.